Welcome to the Lochian Podcast. My name is Conor Muinichon and I work at Black Knight. This is the show about how we live now. You can view or listen to previous episodes if you go to our website at thelochian.ie, and you'll also get information there about how to subscribe to get the audio version of the podcast. Looking back at the last 18 episodes, 17 episodes prior to this, since the show began, it's a reminder that we've come a long way from the Dian Glossol, from the intense lockdown of late March and early April. We're in phase three of the government's reopening plan, and many of us are experiencing the extraordinary sensation of finding ourselves out and about again, albeit with some restrictions and some changes. We're wearing masks, we're doing social distancing, we're hand sanitising. It's life, but not as we know it. We're back in business with new technology. And part of that new technology is the official HSE social distancing app, or contact tracing app, the COVID tracker, which was launched this morning. And so far, almost 300,000 people have checked in using it since it was launched. So are we trading privacy for public health? And are the concerns expressed by some people valid? And will it even work? Joining me on the show today is data protection expert Dara O'Brien, Managing Director of Castlebridge. They're experts in data governance, privacy and ethics. Welcome to the show, Dara.
Thanks for having me on, Colin.
Dara, I see that Trinity College researchers have cast some doubt already as to whether this will even work, whether Bluetooth technology is able to be technically effective when it comes to recording whether or not you've been in close contact with somebody. That's the first concern, really, isn't it?
That is. The way that I describe this to people is it's a bit like building a house with Lego, and the first layer on the Lego house is the Bluetooth piece. And if that doesn't work, the rest of it isn't stable. It isn't going to work either for the purposes we're looking for. And one of the challenges we have with this is that the Bluetooth technology that we're looking to use to measure the distance between people is the technology that's used to let your phone know that your headphones have moved to another room. And it's measuring signal strength. But anyone who's used an old-style radio down the country, and I live in Wexford, this is a big shout-out to for the Southeast on this podcast today. Anyone who's used an old-style radio in rural parts of Ireland will know that signal strength is influenced by everything from the shape of the hill to the weather on the day and other things in your environment, like large poles that might act like an antenna and amplify signal, or other things that might block and absorb signal, like large bodies of water nearby that could be making it look like people are closer together than they are, or maybe further apart than they are. And that's why the technology at the Bluetooth layer is having to look at sampling data over a period of time and building an average view. And Trinity have looked at this and they found some issues with the technology. For example, if you are in an environment where you're surrounded by metal, for example, there is a potential that it will give a false positive or a false negative result in terms of how close people are to you. Now, I travel by train. They are made of metal. And here we have the type of scenario we might see is that the environment we would most want to have the technology working within, there is a risk that it mightn't give us the answers we need at the level of accuracy we need to have a trusted solution that doesn't swamp contact tracers or swamp us with notifications that aren't relevant and aren't accurate and cause us to start, a bit like all the email notifications that come in on your iPhone, you might just knock them off and ignore them. We really can't do that with a notification about a close contact in the context of pandemic. We do need to take action on those messages, and that's the issue. The accuracy of the Bluetooth message to the app, tell the app what to do next.
Yet, on the other hand, Dara, a lot of the measures that are in place, face masks, social distancing, they're certainly effective, but nothing's 100% effective. Nothing is guaranteed in relation to all this. Is it 15 minutes of close contact, or is it 16 minutes, or could you perhaps find yourself in contact with somebody for an hour and find that they haven't transmitted the virus to you? There is a lot of uncertainty here, people agree. But isn't there something to be said for giving this a shot, and maybe some of these errors will iron themselves out in the aggregate?
And I think that's one of the key things, that face masks, hand washing, those sorts of things, there's very good scientific demonstrable evidence they are effective to a certain point. What we don't have is any evidence that says the Bluetooth methodology will be effective. It is less privacy invasive and also potentially more accurate than other technologies for measuring people's location and proximity to each other. But it is still unproven for this use. And one of the inventors of Bluetooth gave evidence to a Dutch committee, to the Dutch Parliament on Bluetooth apps. And his comment was that it isn't what they designed it to do. Mm. And when the guy who invented it is saying, I don't think it's going to work because we didn't design it that way, it is cause for pause. Mm. However, the HSE has gone about this in quite a good way. There has been quite a high level of transparency. They've published the source code for how the app works. They've published a reasonably good DPIA. They've published the Data Protection Commission's comments on their original DPIA and identified how they've incorporated them. From that point of view, I'm not feeling the normal sort of cynical fear and nervousness I get around public sector data projects, because they put an awful lot of effort into trying to build the trust that's needed so that people will start using the app, because there's two numbers games. One, there's the numbers game of how effective Bluetooth will be. The other number we're looking at is the penetration of the app and how many people are actually using it, not just downloading it, but actually using it. Because we need to get to a reasonably high penetration of smartphone users to actually get meaningful, actionable information for infection control. And for that reason, the work that the HSE has done on trust is really, really important. The fact that they've done a very, very good DPIA, the template mm-hmm. and approach they have taken, is the best I have seen in the public sector. Mm-hmm. And while I disagree with some of the things in it, mm-hmm. I cannot fault them on the methodology and the approach. Mm-hmm. And the work the guys in Nearform who built the app have done in terms of building in transparency and communicating in the app things that are being done, to me, it looks like a pretty good job that mm-hmm. they've done putting it together. The key question is whether it'll work for what we needed to do.
That's right. I have to say, downloading it this morning, reviewing the privacy and data protection policy that's provided and the explanation of how the data is treated as a user, and I suppose as somebody who's reasonably technically proficient and who is interested in this kind of thing, I found it very reassuring from a user or from a community point of view. And the other thing I think you've pointed out there is perhaps characteristic of the government and HSE's approach to COVID-19 crisis all along, which I think is an acceptance and an understanding that people can't be coerced, that you can't legislate for everything, and that the entire effort hangs on community goodwill and a sense that we're all in this together. And I got this, I have a sense this morning, looking at social media, looking at tweets, and looking at the sheer numbers of people who have to date downloaded and installed the app, that some of that goodwill and open-mindedness, and there's a sense that people are saying, okay, let's give this a shot and see if it works.
Yeah, and that's fantastic to see, and that's a good lesson for the public sector, for the government to learn about these types of projects. This hasn't been made mandatory but not compulsory, which they could have done. It hasn't been implemented through mushroom management, which they could have done. They put an awful lot of information out on GitHub. If you wanted to troll through some of the technical design documents for the app, they were there for you to look at. And I'm the sort of nerd who did. But on the other hand, that is a key learning that needs to be carried forward by the government into other things they do, because the trust can evaporate very, very quickly. And one of the key tests we have for this app now is the next 90 days.
There's a review period.
Yeah, it's the bedding in period. It's the 90-day test period, effectively, where the effectiveness of the Bluetooth processing is going to be evaluated. The effectiveness of the app is going to be evaluated. And in the governance that they have for this app, in the undertakings they've given to the Data Protection Commission as part of the DPIA, they've undertaken that if the app isn't meeting its objectives and if it isn't working and if it isn't effective, they'll turn it off. Now, that's the next big test for the HSE in this and for the Department of Health. If in 90 days' time we find that there's a massive amount of false positives or false negatives on the exposure notification, if people are drowning in push messages and push notifications about close contacts that they couldn't possibly have had. Mm-hmm. That will damage the app. That will damage the trust. But the thing that will really damage trust is if there isn't a decision taken to pull the plug on that, because that's what they've undertaken to do. Mm-hmm. So this is where the investment needs to be in trust needs to be carried forward into the implementation. And they need to. This is a learning process for everyone, because this is the first time we've implemented a technology like this. This is the first time Bluetooth has been used for this type of purpose anywhere in the world. And we other countries are implementing them. But this is the first time that it's being used for this purpose. And the worst time to figure out how to make a fire extinguisher is when your house is on fire. And that's what we've had to do over the past few months, is figure out how to make fire extinguishers out of what's lying around the room while the house is burning down. I think the HSE has done a pretty good job. I have to be fair to them. And anyone who knows me knows I hate being fair to public sector projects.
It's interesting, Darragh, because I think that you would certainly say that it's a situation where, as I said, there is a certain amount of goodwill. Many people might view it as being like wearing a mask. It might be uncomfortable to do that. But if it's the price of being able to get out and about, maybe it's worth the effort or worth giving it a shot.
Yes. Mm. I give it a qualified thumbs up at the moment. Mm. We need to see more information about how things pan out.
Yeah.
It is like wearing a mask. You might find it's uncomfortable. Mm. You might have issues with letting the state have access to information about who the people you're encountering, or logging symptoms and logging that you live in a particular county, etc., or a particular town.
But again, Darragh, that's optional. They're asking you if you want to volunteer that information. You don't necessarily have to do that. You don't even have to give them a phone number. In fact, the determination as to whether you've been exposed, that happens on your own phone. And if you choose to ignore that, you can. It's actually very carefully, there's privacy by design in many ways, I think, built into this.
Exactly. It's a fantastically good case study in privacy by design. My point, Conor, that is that you might have an issue with those concepts or those things, but look into it. Learn the good things that have been done with this.
Yeah.
And then download and use the app in whatever way you feel comfortable using it. In the same way as with a mask, it might irritate. Like, I wear glasses. Yes, my glasses fog up. I had to speak to a friend of mine who's a surgeon to get tips on how to wear a mask without my glasses fogging up. But I'll wear a mask out in public. The big difference is I know the mask will work.
Yes.
I know the mask will work for the purpose that I'm wearing it, which is to protect others from my droplets and my vapor, etc. The jury's still out on whether this app is going to work. The problem is we're not going to know it works until we've got a reasonable number of people using it and we can actually learn from the data.
Well, it's interesting, and it's also worth noting, I think, Darragh, that we concede a certain amount of our privacy for a lot less worthy causes, for social media and for things like that, and for things that we enjoy, for apps we enjoy, which are ostensibly free, but actually they're not, and the price is our privacy. In this case, I think people may feel it's very much more worthwhile, and we're giving away an awful lot less.
I think so. And for apps or any business looking at how to implement privacy by design, how to build trust with their customers, looking at the journey the HSE has gone on in building this app from end of March, beginning of April, when it was first floated, to today, it's a really good journey they've gone on, where they've engaged with stakeholders, they've listened to criticism, and they have delivered. While I can't say it's perfect, nothing ever will be. As Mike Ryan, from the World Health Organization, says, perfect is enemy of the good. Here we have something that is good. It's not perfect. And it's a good lesson for any organization when they're looking at things, to look at, well, how can we do this in a way that is going to help our customers trust what we're doing? And what are the trade-offs we need to communicate to people about, okay, we want to do this better, but these are the limitations we're operating within. And give people meaningful choice in what they want to do. And that's the one thing the HSE has done quite well. They made almost everything in the app optional for you to use. And they're building it on a distributed, decentralized approach from Apple and Google, which minimizes the amount of data that the state will ever have about who you're meeting, when, and why. The bulk of the heavy lifting is being done on your device. The downside is it only works for phone, for iPhone 7 and above. So yes, straight away, there's an immediate level of discrimination to an mm-hmm. extent against people from poorer backgrounds or people who might be in a position to upgrade their phones. But again, the perfect is the enemy of the good.
Mm-hmm. Very good point. Finally, Dara, I want to welcome you on board for a project that both Black Knight and Castlebridge are collaborating on. For the last number of weeks, we've been running a series of business recovery podcasts, which we've called Bricks and Clicks. You can see the URL at the bottom of the screen if you're watching the video version for that webinar series. They are at bk.ie/webinar. And Dara, you're going to present a webinar for us on the 29th of July, all about the data dimension of doing business online. I want to ask you about the details of that, Dara, yeah, in a moment. But first, can you tell us a bit about what your own experience has been of working with companies and businesses in lockdown and now in this reopening phase as well? Are companies turning to technology?
Companies are turning to technology. The big experience we had was there was a period of time when things stopped, for want of a better expression. Mm-hmm. We had a number of projects where the clients had to accept the need for working remotely. But we've run a couple of very successful projects in shorter timescales than they would have taken in traditional face-to-face traveling to the client mm-hmm. type of meetings. For things like data strategy for organizations. And the feedback has been quite good. We've had to learn how to do things differently ourselves in terms of delivering and engaging with people. But that's a fantastic experience for us. We've a slight unfair advantage in that I hate traveling. So the main office is in Dublin and I live in Wexford. Mm. So we tend to work remotely a lot of the time anyway as a company and always have. I say that slightly in jest about hating traveling, but more markedly, my family hate it when I travel.
Yes,
because I tend to be away too much or in the past. One of the key learnings that organizations have that are adopting technology is figuring out what works and being willing to experiment and stop doing things that aren't working for them with mm-hmm. technology instead of being locked in and committing to it. Mm-hmm. And the big thing, Tom, is we've gone through the equivalent of 5 years of evolution in how organizations think about using technology and working online and work with data. We've done that in 4.5 months.
Yeah.
It's a significant change in mindset for organizations. And what we're seeing a lot of inquiries coming to us now are about, I have this data. How do I use it better? How do I reduce cost in my organization by using my data better? How do I improve the effectiveness of my organization by automating processes? Or I tried to automate things in my business and it all fell apart. Can you help me understand why? And they're the sorts of things that we really like helping organizations figure out. I said, we help people do great things with data.
And of course, for people who are now find themselves handling data that they haven't been used to, there's also concern about compliance and GDPR that they may find they have some misinformation or some worries about how they're handling that.
Oh, the amount of rumor, innuendo, and Dr. Google. I mentioned earlier, my friend is a doctor. He and I joke about Dr. Google on a regular mm-hmm. basis. He's got medical Dr. Google. I got data protection and data management Dr. Google. Mm-hmm. This is the table. This is the entry point for organizations. This is the price. This is the entry point into how you do business mm-hmm. and how you approach your management and gathering of data about customers, staff, etc. in an organization is part of your brand now when you're working online. It's part of the experience people have of you as an organization. So whether it's keeping it safe and secure, whether it's gathering just what you need for your purposes, whether it's your transparency in communicating what you're doing, or the tools, technologies, and partners you choose to work with to do that for your customers, that's all important. And being able to answer questions about how you are doing things and why you're making certain choices about tools and technologies that you're using, that's part of building trust. And there's a lot of research around the contribution that makes to things like speed of sale, contribution to bottom line, et cetera, that you don't see in the normal dull and boring data protection courses that people might have gone on in the past. But thinking about it not as something else you need to do, but as just a core part of how you need to do your business now, will really help organizations step up and actually achieve some good scalable and sustainable gains in their business in what is the new normal, for want of a better phrase.
Well, we look forward to hearing more details about that, Dara, in the webinar that you are delivering on the 29th of July. As we said, there's more details about that and the other webinars in the series at bk.ie/webinar. Dara O'Brien, thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Con.
And that's it for this week on the Lock In podcast. Again, you can find out more at thelockin.ie. Until next week, slán go fóill.